With its abundant natural beauty, charming towns, and friendly people, South Carolina offers the kind of discoveries that stay with you long after you've left. Like the realization you're good at something you never before tried. Or your first oyster roast, and a taste you didn't expect to love. And other times, it just hits. Like the view on a windswept Appalachian mountaintop. So come find the undiscovered you in South Carolina. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hey, what are you doing? Stop here. I told you we cannot afford to be seen. I looked at her in annoyance, and without giving her a response, I walked out. It had been over 10 hours of me driving around her with that thing in my car while holding the urge to take a dump. Not like it was my fault we were in this mess. Now that I think about it, I never even wanted to be with her. But now that we were, the least she could do was own up to it. I have had it with her lording it over me. It made me feel like I was her underling or something. Without caring that I had left her in the car alone, I walked into Love's Stop to use the restroom. Deliberately taking my sweet time, I started thinking about where it all started going wrong. 6 months ago, Jim, my drinking buddy, had thrown a party before leaving the town for good, and by the looks of it, he had invited half of the drunkards here, but the girls seemed to be giving life to the boring farewell. While intoxicated with booze and hooters, my eyes landed on the prettiest flower of the party. She was as beautiful as a Juliet rose. Sitting on the bar counter drinking her martini, she attracted almost every man's attention. I was not immune to the enchantment of the fairer sex, so the desire to have her sprouted in my heart. As I started walking to her, I noticed Jim approached her, and before I knew it, the two of them were kissing in the corner. I loved the man, but sometimes he got on my nerves, and that time was no different. The girl seemed drunk since she excused herself to the bathroom while covering a hand on her mouth after a few minutes of their kissing, which relaxed me. Looking at how my friend didn't wait to have his hands under another girl's shirt, she must not be one of his girlfriends. I grabbed a towel and went to wait outside the bathroom for her. Regrets come in many forms, and I have no idea mine would be the face of a beautiful woman when I found myself cleaning up her puke at 3 a.m. while she lay naked on my bed. If you're wondering, no, we didn't do anything. More like couldn't, since she ruined my sheets and floor with the crab she had for dinner. So the tragedy of life continues when she accuses me of taking advantage of her the following day. I mean, come on. Woman, I cleaned your vomit off my floor. She wasn't willing to listen to my explanation, and it ended in me apologizing to her after telling her for the 100th time that we didn't do anything.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Jim left for a few days, and my life was usually going until about 6 months later. She dropped unannounced at my place, drenched in the rain. She told me that she was nearby and it started raining, and she didn't know where to go. It was like I had forgotten about the other day. Just thinking about it made my mouth bitter. But judging by the way it was raining, she would probably get sick if she stayed like that any longer, and I sure as hell didn't want to take the blame for that. So I let her in. I took her to the hearth room, handed her a towel to dry herself, and turned to leave. "Can't you stay for a bit? I don't want to be alone." Her words somehow felt as if they had some secret encoded message in them, so I looked at her in confusion, only to find her staring at me with desire. As I mentioned earlier, I am not immune to women's enchantment, and the way her translucent dress had clung to her like a second skin, making everything visible, was turning me on just by looking at her. Subconsciously, my eyes trailed the outline of her body over her dress, and as she noticed that, she removed it for me to analyze her bare skin. I don't know what came over me, but I couldn't resist succumbing to my indecent thoughts. The following morning, I jolted up and I questionably found myself. She was lying naked on me. I quickly grabbed my clothes and started dressing up. "Kian, you in there?" It was Jim's voice, but what was he doing here? Before I could say anything, he walked in and his gaze shifted from me to the temptress lying naked on my bed. "So it was you," he mumbled while clenching his fist. His tense jaw and lips said I would not like whatever came next. Listen to me first. I panicked. Jim, how are you here? That siren woke up and asked him while rubbing her eyes. So he is the one you've been cheating with. My best friend. His words left me flabbergasted. What was he saying? Cheated? So, was it to you? Her nonchalant reply made me look at her in disbelief. Hey, you seduced me. I couldn't finish my sentence as he dashed and grabbed me by the throat. I tried to say he had misunderstood this and had no idea about the relationship, but he was strangling me so hard that I started choking and grasping for air. That was when I saw my moon lamp breaking on his head. He let go of me, and he tried to maintain his balance, and before he could turn, she stabbed him with the sharp metal part of the lamp. Horrified, I stood there frozen, hoping it all to be a nightmare. But it wasn't. It was a terrifying reality. She was no rose, but an oleander, toxic from root to tip. And without realization, I had touched the poison the day I first saw her. She suggested we couldn't leave the body like that and made me load it in the car. I was scared, so I followed whatever command she gave me. Present. After finishing my business, I half-heartedly headed to the car and noticed two officers standing near it. Since they caught me, I couldn't turn back, or I would look suspicious, so I continued to walk. But as I saw them escorting out that temptress, I flinched and my steps slowed. She was bleeding through her forehead, and she somehow tied herself with the wire lying around on my back seat. The girl was right. There is a dead body here. Another officer walked in front and informed the other. My mind kept telling me I had to run, but my body didn't follow and stood frozen. My eyes were still fixated on her sniffling and the way one of the officers consoled her. What in the world did she tell them? I was handcuffed within seconds, but all I could think about was how easy it was for her to frame me for everything she did. I should have just called the cops instead of doing her bidding. Deciphering some of their words as they talked about their case amongst themselves, she might have seen them approach and quickly injured herself to make it look like I did it. She told them I did indecent things to her before kidnapping her and killing her boyfriend. As they are taking me to the police station for further questioning, all I can think is that fate played a cruel trick on me the day I crossed my path with her. Hell, I don't even know her name. Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so. Want to go on a bike ride? Ryan asked out of the blue as the two of us couldn't sleep for some reason. This time at night, don't you think it's going to be a little unsafe out there? I looked at the time and it was 2 a.m. Come on, Darlene, it would be nice feeling the breeze in our hair with peace where there won't be a single soul to disturb it. He was right. It would feel nice without anyone around. I don't know, Ryan. Still, I was a bit unsure since it's not safe at this time around. Do you want to go or not? Should I just go on my own? He looked at me and said as he got up from the bed, Fine, sheesh, I'll come. I said while getting up and running my fingers through my hair. He gave me a little smug smile as he grabbed his bike keys in the jacket. I tied my hair in a high pony, and the two of us headed outside the house, locking it behind us. After taking out his bike from the garage, he handed me a helmet and started it before giving me that thumbs up to sit behind him. I was still a little anxious and nervous about this whole night riding thing, but there was a sense of excitement as well for doing something out of the ordinary. He wasn't wrong about feeling the breeze in my hair. I opened my hand to embrace the air while Ryan nagged me to put the helmet on, as it was unsafe for me to do this. This guy can sometimes be so cool while most of the time acting like an old man. His personality is so damn confusing. So I realized we had headed a bit far from home when I noticed the highway approaching, and he drove right around the circle making a U-turn. But then, as we reached an area surrounded by trees, he stopped. Why did you stop? I asked in confusion. I mean, it was 2 something at night, and he was taking a break in the middle of nowhere. To do this. He turned around, grabbed my chin gently with 3 fingers, and collided our lips together. A pleasant smile automatically made its way to my lips as I kissed him back with more passion, while my lips were still getting eaten by his. I noticed the streetlight across flickering. so I pulled away. Ryan, I think we should leave. As I said that, he followed my gaze and looked up at the fluctuating light. Are you being paranoid? Scared of a little ghost? He teased me as he said that and started laughing. You know that's not the case. I'm just scared of the dark, and when that light suddenly goes out, it's going to make me uncomfortable. I reminded him of my nyctophobia, and he agreed to get out of that place. He turned around and started the bike, and as he started moving to the street with more lights, I felt a little at ease. Just when we were approaching our neighborhood, I heard multiple bike sounds and turned around to see about 4 or 5 men riding towards us. They had tattoos and a sleeveless t-shirt with metal engraved on it. It looked like a bit street punk style and very bad at that. It seemed like guys that had no sense of style whatsoever, and as a stylist, that was an extremely disturbing sight to see. Ryan increased his bike speed, making me confused, and I noticed these guys doing the same. What's going on? Are they chasing us? I asked him, since it didn't seem like those guys were trying to catch on to us. They're a biker gang infamous for robbing people at night, and I think they noticed us and want trouble, he said while maintaining his impressive speed, all the while making sure I was safe. But we don't have anything for them to rob, I said in confusion, since we just came out for a little night ride. We have this bike, don't we? As I mentioned that, I figured he was right. Those thugs might beat us and snatch the bike. The chase went on a bit longer, and since Ryan didn't want those people to know where we lived, he kept taking different turns. And when he was on a familiar street, I got an idea. I know a shortcut home from here. Do you think you can outrun them to make a turn at that narrow alley by the closed coffee shop? He nodded his head yes in response, which I gave him directions. And right after taking that turn, he went into the alley I mentioned before those bikers could see us. He immediately turned off the bike, and as the alley was extremely dark, we weren't visible to those guys, and they passed right through us. As I mentioned earlier, I have an extreme fear of the dark, so even though I tried to bear it to keep it under control, I couldn't help feeling panic inside and began excessively sweating. My mouth started to feel dry as I clung to the figure with me, and I could feel my heart start palpitating like a racehorse. Since the biker gang was still lurking around looking for us, we couldn't get out of the dark alley just yet, but my phobia couldn't bear being here any longer, so I passed out. I felt some water droplets being sprinkled on my face, and was woken up by that when I found myself lying on a bench with my head on Ryan's lap. He looked worried, and it seemed we were not in the dark alley anymore. The moment he noticed me opening my eyes, a few teardrops fell from his eyes to my cheek, and I immediately got up. Since I wasn't in a dark place now, my symptoms had gone down, and I was feeling a bit better, but looking at him all worked up and concerned over me gave me a bit of a nice feeling. I hugged him to reassure him that I was okay now, and after a few minutes, we decided to head back. He kept apologizing the entire way back, though. He said it was because he insisted on coming outside at this time at night that I had to suffer, and I kept saying it was not his fault. We finally reached the house, and as I was entering the house, I felt a sharp gaze on my back. Turned around to see there was no one there, but still, my paranoia made me get inside immediately. I locked the door behind me, and I know someone was watching us, whether it was some member of the biker gang or someone else.
Want to go on a bike ride? Ryan asked out of the blue as the two of us couldn't sleep for some reason. This time at night, don't you think it's going to be a little unsafe out there? I looked at the time, and it was 2 in the morning. Come on, Darlene. It would be nice feeling the breeze in our hair with peace where there won't be a single soul to disturb it. He was right. It would feel nice without anyone around. I don't know, Ryan. Still, I was a bit unsure since it's not safe at this time around. Do you want to go or not? Should I just go on my own? He looked at me and said as he got up from the bed, Fine, sheesh, I'll come. I said while getting up and running my fingers through my hair. He gave me a little smug smile as he grabbed his bike keys and the jacket. I tied my hair in a high pony, and the two of us headed outside the house, locking it behind us. After taking out his bike from the garage, he handed me a helmet and started it before giving me that thumbs up to sit behind him. I was still a little anxious and nervous about this whole night riding thing, but there was a sense of excitement as well for doing something out of the ordinary. He wasn't wrong about feeling the breeze in my hair. I opened my hand to embrace the air while Ryan nagged me to put the helmet on, as it was unsafe for me to do this. This guy can sometimes be so cool while most of the time acting like an old man. His personality is so damn confusing. So I realized we had headed a bit far from home when I noticed the highway approaching, and he drove right around the circle making a U-turn. But then, as we reached an area surrounded by trees, he stopped. "Why did you stop?" I asked in confusion. I mean, it was 2-something at night, and he was taking a break in the middle of nowhere. "To do this." He turned around, grabbed my chin gently with 3 fingers, and collided our lips together. A pleasant smile automatically made its way to my lips as I kissed him back with more passion, while my lips were still getting eaten by his. I noticed the street light across flickering, so I pulled away. Ryan, I think we should leave." As I said that, he followed my gaze and looked up at the fluctuating light. "Are you being paranoid? Scared of a little ghost?" He teased me as he said that and started laughing. "You know that's not the case. I'm just scared of the dark, and when that light suddenly goes out, it's going to make me uncomfortable." I reminded him of my nyctophobia, and he agreed to get out of that place. He turned around and started the bike, and as he started moving to the street with more lights, I felt a little at ease. Just when we were approaching our neighborhood, I heard multiple bike sounds and turned around to see about 4 or 5 men riding towards us. They had tattoos and a sleeveless t-shirt with metal engraved on it. It looked like a bit street punk style and very bad at that. It seemed like guys that had no sense of style whatsoever, and as a stylist, that was an extremely disturbing sight to see. Ryan increased his bike speed, making me confused, and I noticed these guys doing the same. "What's going on? Are they chasing us?" I asked him, since it didn't seem like those guys were trying to catch on to us. "They're a biker gang infamous for robbing people at night, and I think they noticed us and want trouble," he said while maintaining his impressive speed, all the while making sure I was safe. "But we don't have anything for them to rob," I said in confusion, since we just came out for a little night ride. "We have this bike, don't we?" As I mentioned that, I figured he was right. Those thugs might beat us and snatch the bike. The chase went on a bit longer, and since Ryan didn't want those people to know where we lived, he kept taking different turns. And when he was on a familiar street, I got an idea. "I know a shortcut home from here. Do you think you can outrun them to make a turn at that narrow alley by the closed coffee shop?" He nodded his head yes in response, which I gave him directions. And right after taking that turn, he went into the alley I mentioned before those bikers could see us. He immediately turned off the bike, and as the alley was extremely dark, we weren't visible to those guys, and they passed right through us. As I mentioned earlier, I have an extreme fear of the dark, so even though I tried to bear it to keep it under control, I couldn't help feeling panic inside and began excessively sweating. My mouth started to feel dry as I clung to the figure with me, and I could feel my heart start palpitating like a racehorse. Since the biker gang was still lurking around looking for us, we couldn't get out of the dark alley just yet, but my phobia couldn't bear being here any longer, so I passed out. I felt some water droplets being sprinkled on my face, and was woken up by that when I found myself lying on a bench with my head on Ryan's lap. He looked worried, and it seemed we were not in the dark alley anymore. The moment he noticed me opening my eyes, a few teardrops fell from his eyes to my cheek, and I immediately got up. Since I wasn't in a dark place now, my symptoms had gone down, and I was feeling a bit better, but looking at him all worked up and concerned over me gave me a bit of a nice feeling. I hugged him to reassure him that I was okay now, and after a few minutes, we decided to head back. He kept apologizing the entire way back, though. He said it was because he insisted on coming outside at this time at night that I had to suffer. And I kept saying it was not his fault. We finally reached the house, and as I was entering the house, I felt a sharp gaze on my back. turned around to see there was no one there, but still, my paranoia made me get inside immediately. I locked the door behind me, and I know someone was watching us, whether it was some member of the biker gang, or someone else.
Have you heard about the haunted stories of the tunnels of Sand Hill Road? Well, if you haven't, then better brace yourselves because that's exactly what I'm about to tell you, since this experience of mine is not pleasant on the ears. It was one night when I was driving through Charleston Street along with my buddy Ronald. We were quite drunk as we had just gotten out of a nightclub after enjoying ourselves for hours, and now we're headed to the hotel we were staying at. I don't know if it was because we were too drunk to have a hallucination or if it was real, but I swear I saw a white blur passing through our car. And just after that, it suddenly shut off at the very spot, and no matter how much longer I tried to start the car again, it didn't seem to work. Ron, hey, dude, wake up. The car's dead. You need to help me check the problem. I shook past out Ronald, but he didn't budge. So I opened a bottle of water and threw it on him, causing him to wake up groaning. He was still in the same drunken state, so I had to push him out of the car and forcefully make him stand with a flashlight while I checked the issue. Weirdly, everything seemed fine, and even the fuel was full, so I couldn't understand what caused it to suddenly stop working like that.
Luke, I don't feel so good. So I'm just gonna go back to the car and sleeping. You take care of this.
I turned back to see him walking back to the car door, stumbling after saying that. After waiting there on the lookout for about 20 minutes to get help from any passing by vehicle, I couldn't believe not even a single one had passed by. So I tried to contact Jess back at the hotel to ask him to send some mechanic or help, but he didn't pick up. And looking at how it was 1 in the morning, I wasn't surprised either. I went back to the car after waiting for a few more minutes and leaning my head back on the driving seat. Ronald had already been fast asleep by now, and as peacefully as he was sleeping, one could even say that he had not a care in the world. There was nothing I could do at this hour except wait for morning to be able to find some help, so I closed my eyes to sleep it off. But for some strange reason, the only thing I got was an uneasy feeling in my chest that was getting stronger by the minute. So I opened my eyes and drank a few sips of water. I don't know if it was the effects of being out in the middle of nowhere or if it was the time of night that was the cause, but all of a sudden, the surrounding area started giving off hair-raising vibes. I don't know if it was my brain playing tricks on me, but the distance between the tunnels that were pretty far earlier in the car started to feel close. I clenched my eyes, rubbing them and opening them again, and this time it was back to normal. I thought maybe I was having hallucinations because of the time and the effects of alcohol still being present in my system. Still, shaking this feeling of fear I was experiencing felt like a daunting task, so I decided to give a few more shots at starting the car. On the first try, the car didn't give a response. On the second try, still the same, and the car didn't start. On the third try, I was thinking, if it won't start this time, I won't try any longer. And just as I thought it did, not this time either. I wasn't going to give it any more tries, but it's good that I did, because the car started smoothly as if it was never dead in the first place. For some reason, driving at the minimal speed felt right. And as I was getting closer to the tunnel, the spine-tingling feeling just kept growing stronger and stronger. It was as if the tunnel was giving off a warning, "I dare you to cross me." But I was scared that if I stopped the car now, it won't start. So I kept going forward. Even then, I didn't dare to speed up, because that eerie feeling was too much for me to handle. It was weird that I took this turn when we were getting back from the nightclub, because earlier we came from a different route than this one. As my attention was focused on the tunnel, the white blur went across the car again, and instead of stopping, its radio suddenly turned on with nothing but static noise coming from it, which made me shake in my boots with terror.
it was still surprising to see that even such loud and disturbing noises weren't enough to wake Ronald from his sleep. Since the tunnel was only 3 feet, there was no possibility of driving through, nor was I planning to. But still, driving anywhere near the area was frightening as well. That was when the radio stopped, and I saw a white figure, which was possibly a woman, appear on the edge of the tunnel. It was as if my breath got stuck in my throat, and I felt two eerie eyes glowing, staring right at me. Nothing more of a red flag than this one was enough for me to turn the car around, so I acted on the speed of the flash and drove as far away as possible. I did look at the back mirror once, but I couldn't see that woman again as she had disappeared. When I was sure that I had gotten to a safe distance from that place, I took out my phone and opened the navigation app. I looked for a route that was safe for me to drive without any more spook for the night. Thankfully, I reached the hotel safe and sound at night, but by the time I did, it was already 4 in the morning. After a handful of struggles, I was finally able to wake up Ronald and then drag him to his hotel room. All the tiredness and sleep was finally catching up to me, so I fell asleep the moment I lay on my bed. The next morning, I told my friends about whatever happened to me, but they laughed it off, saying that it must have been a drunken hallucination. I swear that Ronald seemed like a thorn at this point, since he did nothing to help me last night besides sleeping like a log. I didn't remember what tunnel it was, so I searched on Google for answers. But when I found out it was not just me who had experience like that, there were many reported sightings of that woman, along with paranormal activities that happened there at night. I came across many articles that claimed a rumor about a deceased couple who haunted those underground tunnels. There had been many sights of an old woman who appeared whenever a car enters those streets. Doesn't matter if these two idiots didn't believe me. I was feeling lucky that the problem in our car disappeared and I was able to leave when I did. Otherwise, God knows what might have happened. And who knows if this moron who is laughing like a hyena right now would have been alive or dead.
My wife and I travel often city to city, and at one point we settled down in Vegas for a few months. There was one night we were arguing after work, headed towards Henderson, a city outside of Vegas. Lots of isolated streets out of the way. I was sitting reclined back in the passenger seat when we ran over something and the tire definitely popped. My wife got out to check and confirmed it. Within seconds, a woman in a very nice car pulls up behind us. I saw she was a woman, and I lay back in the seat, still mad, still stubborn, and figuring she was just checking on my wife, assuming she was alone. The woman said she had a brother-in-law with a tow truck, and he could definitely tow the car free of charge to a shop. My wife asked why she was being so kind, and she said something like, "Us sisters gotta stick together. I'm helping you out." She then got back in the car, and my wife told me that she was going to follow us with her hazards on this empty and dark parking lot in front of some grocery store nearby to get us out of the road. I still didn't think it was weird at all. My wife was very confident this woman was genuine and really wanted to help. So we pulled into the parking lot and my wife got out. I'm still laying back. This woman doesn't even know I'm here yet. She starts talking to my wife about how she changed her life within a year. She could put her on to what she does. It seemed believable. She looked very nice and her car was definitely expensive. My wife keeps insisting she can just call a tow truck. She felt bad she was taking time from her and we could afford it. The woman kept insisting her brother-in-law was coming and to be patient, he really doesn't mind. She even offered at some point to drive my wife around the area looking for a shop that was open. But my wife had already Googled some places. She told her that's smart and they kept talking. No suspicion, honestly. She then starts asking my wife why she's in Vegas. We had New York plates. She says for adventure and doing something new, blah, blah, blah. The woman asked if she has family she's close to or a boyfriend and she could introduce her to some friends to help her get well acquainted or whatever. She motions over to me and says, "Well, I have a husband." And the woman looked like a deer in the headlights. I politely waved. She leans over and finally sees me, stares for a few seconds, and immediately gets in her car. instantly. I never saw someone look at me like that. Like she had to get away from me. She tells my wife she has to go to a store that's opening soon. Her brother-in-law is taking too long, but he will be there in an hour at least. She told her not to leave. He'll come help. 1 hour. Okay, honey. My wife was confused and tried to ask her if she'd be there too, but the woman just drove off. We knew then that something was wrong with that situation. We both just stared at each other in confusion. I have no idea, still, of why that happened. We called the towing company and fixed the car within 40 minutes. Drove back to wait because my wife was persistent in believing the woman was going to come back or her brother-in-law would, and she would have to let them know that she didn't need their help. I told her, I don't think they're coming back, but we did wait. No one came for nearly 2 hours before we drove home. I did some research and found out a lot of traffickers use women because they seem more trustworthy. Vegas obviously has a large presence of these things as well. The woman was almost desperate to keep my wife there. It was all so weird. Now when I look back, it seems more obvious that there was danger there. But in the moment, the woman was so charming and endearing that it seemed like she was genuinely trying to help. I still don't know, but I'm pretty sure she ran off because I was there, and she didn't anticipate a man to actually be there.